to be able to work with them and help them get into a better frame of mind and a better place in life, for me, is the purpose of all of this. And it's such an honor to be a part of that process with people.
All right, welcome back to part two of our two-part podcast on the topic of healthy relationships, featuring the incredible Dr. Celesta Harris. In today's episode, Dr. Harris will explain cognitive distortions or thinking errors that can impact our communication, and she's also going to share some simple strategies that can help us to build healthy communication habits, and she shares lots of resources as well and places where you can find more on all of the things we've talked about in both episodes on this topic. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode.
One of the things that I also have learned from you, back when I used to work at DPS, you taught a whole section on this in our resilience program, the cognitive distortions. Can you explain to people what cognitive distortions are and then how that can impact our relationships? And then I'm going to throw in there a third question. What do we do about it?
So cognitive distortions or thinking errors, you know, they have a variety of different terms. And whether anyone has heard that specific terminology or not, everyone is familiar with cognitive distortions, whether they realize it or not. And we all use them. We do, because frankly, our brain wants to take shortcuts and it wants to understand things quickly. And so it tries to fill in the blanks for us based on previous experiences that we've had. And while that can be helpful in some ways, it can also lead us into these ruts of communication. Because if we use those shortcuts too frequently, then it prevents us from really understanding or hearing or seeing or validating the person that we're communicating with. So I'll give some examples. A really common one is jumping to conclusions. So when we assume, we make assumptions that something negative has happened or is happening or will happen because of whatever information we have. So I'll give you an example. And some of these can bleed in together. So the example that I'm going to give is about jumping to conclusions, but also what I would call catastrophizing. And that's where not only are you jumping to conclusions, but you're jumping to the worst case scenario. So for example, let's say in my particular situation, I lost my brother to a drunk driver. And so I'll never forget the phone call that I got from my mom, and I'll never forget that series of events. And so even to this day, almost 20 years later, I still find myself, if I text my husband and he doesn't respond in a timely manner, I really have struggled with not jumping to worst case scenario, like, oh, he's in a ditch somewhere, you know? And I think that moms even make that joke sometimes. It's not unique to moms per se, but your kids are out, they're 16, they're finally getting some freedom or what have you, and they don't respond to your calls or texts. Then it's like, oh my gosh, what's happened to my kid? And that can raise a lot of anxiety and panic within us, so that when our partner does call or respond to our text, now we're just angry. Now we're just mad. Why did it take you so long? And where have you been? And what have you been doing? And I was worried sick. My mother-in-law early in my marriage would text me, call me. And it would just say, call me. And to me, that's like emergency 911. I have to stop everything that I'm doing because this is an emergency. Well, she didn't say this is an emergency. She just said, call me. So that's me jumping to this conclusion that something bad has happened. And it took me a while to really understand where I was coming from and why I was reacting that way. Another one is emotional reasoning. And emotional reasoning it can be a whole podcast in and of itself, quite honestly. But sometimes when we get into that emotional headspace, we think because we feel a thing, it must be accurate or it must be true. If I feel that you did this thing, then it must be that you did this thing. And so then we're not thinking logically. We're being led by our emotions, and we can tend to react and respond more impulsively or in ways that our partner may not even fully understand. Another really common cognitive distortion is, especially with people that we know really well, is what we would call mind reading. And this can go either way. So this can be where maybe you're in a conversation or even a conflict with someone, and you think, I know what they're going to say next. I know what they're thinking. And sometimes we'll catch ourselves saying that to someone, oh, I know what you're thinking. But we don't. And we can make that assumption that we know how someone is going to respond, or we know what they're going to do, and we'll adjust our behavior in preparation for that, and sometimes kind of cut them off at the knees without giving them the opportunity to really express or explain where they're coming from. And the reverse side of that can be the expectation that someone can read our minds. Maybe you've been with your partner or your best friend or whomever for a really, really long time, and something happens and you expect them to know how you would feel about it, or you expect them to know what you would say about it. And when they don't get it right, you're angry with them. Like, how could you not know that I would think about it this way, or that I would feel about it this way? That's an unfair expectation because they're not in our heads. And so there are just an array of cognitive distortions or thinking errors that can color our reactions to situations and our responses to people. The way to combat that is to educate oneself about what are the cognitive distortions. And you Google it, and believe me, you will find plenty to read over. And then it's fostering that sense of self-awareness and being able to identify when we are responding in that way. Like, you're responding angrily because your partner hasn't responded to your text in 2 hours. Why are you responding angrily? What is it that you're perhaps assuming? Or what are the negative connotations that you're placing upon this? Instead of perhaps asking, hey, are you okay? I've been worried and you didn't respond really quickly, and then that makes me anxious. So taking ownership for how you feel, but then asking them, are you okay? And what's been going on? And if there's some sort of adaptation that needs to be made there as far as response time and that sort of thing, then having that conversation. But it really starts with self-awareness and developing that degree of insight, and then being able to say, I just responded in a way that made some assumptions that may not be true. So let me backtrack a little bit and then just ask you. And I've realized that I've done that. So let me try to correct it, and let me draw attention to it for myself so that I can be more aware of it moving forward. Because if we are not aware of those automatic thoughts and reactions, then we can find ourselves in this perpetual relationship pattern that may be unhealthy for us. And then we wonder, why do my relationships end in this way or have this consistent pattern throughout life? And we have to consider how we're contributing to those negative patterns.
I love how you just said that, like just the way you said, wait, let me backtrack. I didn't mean what I said. That would immediately take away the defensiveness, I think, just to be able to reframe what you said in a different, like, I'm thinking about you. Maybe I was kind of showing the empathy. One of the things I learned from Brené Brown, and you mentioned her earlier, that I really like in myself when I'm starting to notice cognitive distortions, or I'll start mind reading or feeling something and thinking Chris needs to know what I'm thinking, I'll say, the story in my head is, and that seems to work really well.
I like
with
that.
Him. He just immediately is like, oh, okay, well, but here's what I'm thinking. And it helps because I just feel like it doesn't put him on the defense because he shouldn't know what I'm thinking. The story in my head is this. I don't know, for what it's worth, that seems to be a good
yeah.
way to
approach it. I really like that, Lacey. I really do. That's great.
So we've identified a lot of things that we can do to recognize distortions in our thinking. Do you have suggestions for how we can actually improve our communication within our relationships? What are some positive things we can do?
I think so. I hope so. So we talked about this a lot, Lacey, as you know, in our resiliency program, and that is gratitude. Gratitude is so critically important to any relationship whatsoever. So really, you want to create a culture of appreciation in your relationships. And I say that because, especially if you're in a romantic relationship and it's a long-term relationship, sometimes we can become focused on what they're doing wrong, and that becomes most of the content in our conversations. And that is not going to set up a healthy dynamic. So if we can shift that focus and this is another exercise I use for couples, it's called I caught you doing something nice, or I caught you doing something kind. And every day you write on this piece of paper that I have, and each partner has a column, and you just write down the one thing that you saw them do that day that you really appreciate. And then you write down why you appreciated it. And we want to train ourselves to become more mindful and intentional in the way we see the people that we have in our lives. And so that we're not consistently looking for what's wrong. We're rather consistently looking for what's going well. And everyone, I would say generally everyone, maybe that's an overgeneralization on my part, but I think most creatures respond far better to positive reinforcement than negative reinforcement. And positive reinforcement is telling them, hey, I saw that you took the extra effort when you did this. And it meant a lot to me because it was one less thing that I had to take care of today. You know, the fact that you swung by the store and you picked up the groceries was really helpful. Or you told me that I looked nice this morning before I left the house. And I was in my head and I was anxious about what I had to do at work today. And that really helped me. It gave me the pump that I needed to like be motivated for the day and feel healthier and feel stronger and feel more empowered. And when we really teach ourselves to pay attention to the positives, it rewires our brain so that those connections become a super highway, and it's much easier for us to find the things we're grateful for and the people that we care about, as opposed to the things that we're constantly unhappy about. So really fostering that gratitude for one another. I think taking ownership and responsibility for our role in the relationship, and that means our reactions, our interpretations, what we're doing that works well, what we're doing that doesn't work well, and realizing that every relationship is a combination, if you will, of people interacting. It's not just one-sided. And so taking responsibility, which again cuts down on that defensiveness that we talked about earlier. It's so important also to really just be mindful of those boundaries that are important to us. So being able to identify if we're in a toxic relationship or if we're in an unhealthy relationship or if we're codependent in a way that is not healthy for us or for our partners. And having that, again, developing that self-awareness so that you can do the self-improvement that's needed to help improve those relationships. And another really important piece is being able to identify quality time versus quantity of time. So many people are pressed for time in all the areas of their life. And whether it's, I don't feel like I have enough time with my kids, or I don't feel like I have enough time with my partner. Sometimes we can't change how much time we have with them, but what do we do with the time we do have? And how do we make that time meaningful? And sometimes it's about sitting down with one another and say, you know, we have to be really aggressive and intentional in the way we spend our time together. What are the things that are important to us? What helps us feel close? What helps us feel intimate? What helps us feel bonded? And in learning to adapt so that you can implement those things with one another. It's so easy to go home at the end of a long day and just crash out on the couch. And then before you know it, the two of you have binged, or your family even has binged 3 hours of TV, but you haven't had a conversation with one another. And so really making that time count. What is it that helps us feel unified, and what brings us together? There's a lot of research to demonstrate that couples who have new experiences with one another, or they have active experiences with one another, they have this kind of rewiring in their brain that creates closer bonds and closer connections. And so being able to identify some of those things and enlisting each other in the things that bring you joy and that bring you happiness and fill your tank so that, again, you have that deeper connection and level of intimacy. And there's one other thing I want to touch on here, because it goes very much to your point about communicating with kids and our children. Something that I think is so crucially important is to help your children and you develop the vocabulary to have these types of conversations. And what I'm referring to here is emotional intelligence. So being able to identify and have the vocabulary to communicate, this is how I'm feeling. This is how I think you might be feeling. And this is how I'm going to regulate my emotional state and how I can regulate my reaction to your emotional state. but helping people develop the language to have those conversations, as opposed to, I just feel like crap, or I'm just angry, or I'm just irritable. But maybe being able to dive a little bit deeper and say, am I lonely? Am I frustrated? Do I feel invalidated? Do I feel unseen? Do I feel unappreciated? Being able to really kind of broaden that scope of vocabulary and communication is really important.
A lot of what we talk about when it comes to just health and well-being in general is building habits. And a lot of the things I'm hearing you say, you know, gratitude is a practice. It's something that we want to become habitual, something you don't necessarily even have to work so hard at. It's just kind of natural that you look for those good things, or being able to talk about your current emotional state with your kids or with your family members. You know, it's almost like just building those habits around communication, just like we would drinking water or, you know, having, you know, our daily physical activity or the other things that we want to do. Do you have any tips for how to actually sort of build some of these things into our day as habits, like times of day, or what would you recommend if somebody wants to kind of build a practice?
Yeah, I really believe strongly that it's about setting that intention. And I think we're hearing that phrase more and more these days, but there's a reason why we're hearing it more, because we don't automatically learn to tie our shoes. It's something we have to really think about. And then before we know it, we do it without thinking. And so it's something we have to learn, and we have to make a point to learn it. So making a point in the morning to say positive things to your partner, or give positive feedback to your coworkers, or say something positive to your children, and being able to hear and receive when people say positive things to you. I think a lot of people have the tendency, for example, to brush off compliments or brush off praise. And being able to receive that and say, thank you, I really appreciate that, and I like that you see mm-hmm. me that way. And so integrating that into who we are, and then being mindful of, how can I demonstrate that gratitude and appreciation to the people that I care about? And yeah, at first, maybe you schedule some times to do it. And then as it becomes more regular for you, then it becomes more normal. And we have to sometimes really make an effort to teach ourselves how to do that.
What's your favorite part of your job?
Oh man, that's a tough one. Honestly, a favorite part of my job is when I see that my work with someone has helped them, and that they are able to identify and say, my life is somehow better in some way because of the work that we did together. And it's such an honor and a privilege for me when someone takes that vulnerable step and asks for help. And then we know that, particularly law enforcement, they don't necessarily have a propensity for help-seeking behavior. And so when they put themselves in that vulnerable position with someone like me, who they may not know, and I'm a complete stranger, and they're going to tell me these things that are really hurting them and weighing on their hearts, to be able to work with them and help them get into a better frame of mind and a better place in life, for me, is the purpose of all of this. And it's such an honor to be a part of that process with people. So it's hard for me to identify my favorite thing, but if I had to pick one, it would be that.
Ooh, that is powerful. And I think we got our opener, right? So good. Do you want to share just really quickly where people might be able to find some resources if they're looking for support with building healthy relationships or communication skills?
Absolutely. So I mentioned earlier the Gottman Institute, and you can Google them, and they have an array of resources on their website. Some are for purchase, and others are just really educational reading. But because there is so much research in particular behind that particular approach to couples counseling, I think that's a really great resource for folks. I also really like to recommend the 5 love languages, to be quite honest with you. And they cover romantic relationships, your relationships with kids, for military and law enforcement personnel. And the 5 love languages, I don't want to use up too much time, but it really can be an eye-opener. It was for me an eye-opener for the different ways people receive and express love. And I'll give you a quick example. So let's say, for example, you have a married couple, and the wife is saying, you know, he never spends any time with me and he's always just doing other stuff. And I don't feel appreciated or seen or heard or loved. And then he says, I don't know what she's talking about because I spend all of my free time remodeling the house and building the deck that she's always wanted. Right. And so what she's saying is, I value quality time to feel loved. And what he's saying is, I perform acts of service to demonstrate love. And so they're both talking about love, but they're not using the same language. And so helping people being able to identify my partner's doing that. And while that's not necessarily my top love language, it's how they express love. And I can receive that in an appreciative way. And so I think the five love languages can be great. And another thing, it's a fun little online quiz. It's very much like the Myers-Briggs, but it's 16, the number 16personalities.com. And my husband and I did that when we were in couples therapy. And it was just a lot of fun. I always love those little quizzes. and it really did. It offered some insights about parenting, about romantic relationships, work relationships, my approach to things, what his approach to things tends to be like. He's much more analytical than I am. And so sometimes I can feel a little unheard. I'm all up in my feelings. And he's like, this is not logical. So it helped us see that in one another. And again, helped us open those roads of communication a little bit better. So I think that's another great resource. And then, of course, there's positivepsychology.com, psychologytoday.com, and then American Psychological Association. And you can find an array of valid, reliable resources on those websites that can be really helpful.
That's wonderful. I will put all of those resources in our show notes. So if you want to check out the show notes, anyone who's listening can go straight there and you can click on those links. And also for people that are within DPS, you have access to an amazing team where you can seek actually, you know, therapy and go to treatment in-house. And if you are not with DPS, you have lots of options as well. Most agencies have an EAP, and through the health plan, we have mental health resources. You can do counseling from your phone through MD Live and Doctor on Demand at no cost if you want to talk to somebody and really get some one-on-one advice from a therapist. You can do that through your phone and schedule an appointment. There are tons of resources, and yeah, definitely know those resources before you need them. I think that's one of the things that we want to always get across. This, you know, it's not when we're in crisis, that's not the time to be looking for, wait, what are my resources? So yeah. Know them now and then have them there when you're ready. So, or when you may need them. I love all the strategies you've shared with us, and I'm truly grateful for you, Dr. Harris. You are such a gift to the state, and I think so many people have just taken away life lessons from the classes that you teach because you do group education. And then a lot of people have been very blessed there at DPS to be able to sit down with you one-on-one and have conversations. And I know that you change lives every day in a positive way. Thank you for all you do, and I'm just looking forward to future opportunities to collaborate with you. I think we could do a whole podcast on workplace culture and also yes. on cognitive disorders. I have lots of ideas.
Well, Lacey, I'm really humbled by what you have to say, and I really, really appreciate it. And you are such an innovator, and I am not at all surprised that you are moving and shaking things out there. I mean, you're just really are a rock star, and it's my pleasure and honor to work with you. So thank you so much for having me.
All right, everyone, that wraps up our first two-part series on the Walk and Talk podcast. I hope you can see why I had to create two parts of this one now. There was just too much good information. I didn't want to cut anything out. Just an FYI, our next episode, which we'll release next week, will feature Doctors Ted and Janet Mitchell. Dr. Ted Mitchell is the chancellor at Texas Tech University, and his wife, Janet, is the first lady of Texas Tech University. They are both medical doctors and care deeply about health and prevention of chronic conditions. And they met in medical school. Well, they'll be actually sharing their personal story with us on the podcast. So tune back in next Friday for that episode. And don't forget to check out our show notes for all the links, and including the link to Dr. Harris's webinar. All right. Thank you again for listening, and take care.